It's working. Making a sound. Step right by you, Mike.
All right, I'm going to call the OSA meeting to order and take roll. Mike Barr?
Here.
Steve Ford?
Here.
Lee Starwish? Here. Jonathan Dharmapalan? Carol Eisen?
Here.
Melissa Mitrovich? Diane Woods?
Here.
We have established a quorum. I would like to move that we move up the advancement update after public comment, since Catherine is presenting and she doesn't feel well.
Okay.
But it's not coronavirus. She clarified that already. What do you mean?
My computer's dead. I was going to follow along online.
Do we have a motion? I just made a motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, the motion moves. We have a student leadership report from Leon Jones.
Good evening, Board of Directors. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year.
Sorry for my voice. I actually literally just finished a theater show, so mind the raspy voice. So glad to see you all. So excited to be giving this report again today. Since I last saw you in December, we have really dived into the true meaning of culture and organizational success, as I would say. December 20th, we had our spirit rally that was one to remember. With OSA trivia, grade level performances, and Pi the Teacher, we were able to get the people and students rally and compete in a grade-friendly way. As a result, there will be two classes selected with the most school spirit, was the 8th graders, class of 2024, and the 11th graders, class of 2021. Their prize is a class pizza party that will take place next week. Continuing the conversation of school culture, the BSOC co-chair for Students of Color, co-chair Sonara Weaver Anderson, and myself have hosted two Let's Talk About Race forums. Open space for all students can come sit down and discuss race as a social construct in academic fashion. The first forum that took place earlier in the month, we opened the floor for students to speak on racially charged events that might have experienced in classrooms, highlighting the experience with a teacher who made an academic choice to recite a poem including the N-word with a hard R. But then with the second forum, we really wanted to focus on growing the conversation, answering two questions that counteract events like the one spoken at the last forum. Number one, tell us a situation where you had a class conversation activity around race and the conversation actually went well. And two, what made it go well, with examples of the teacher being a person of color and going on. Keeping in mind what we have those conversations, and all the amazing feedback, we want to create a healthy school-wide culture where we can all talk about race. For many different responses, we are beginning the process of condensing all the notes that we had at both forums, and hosting one last forum February 3rd, where we can discuss the culture of race on more of a student-to-student level. This now will be presented to the admin and faculty very soon at one of their upcoming professional development, including a fishbowl conversation. That will have students and faculty, but also with faculty, just to make sure I'll give an update on that at the next meeting. Talking about future events, in a week, BSU will be putting on our annual Black History Month Celebration Assembly, February 7th. Ooh! In honor of Black History Month, we are going to put on a show that exhibits the history of Black culture from African mythology to Mansa Musa to the African slave trade to the Harlem Renaissance to Beyonce, and even topics like Afrofuturism. With performances and educational slides, BSU will tackle on this assembly in the round, where the audience is surrounding the entire performance piece. And this is the first time we've ever done that for assembly, so wish them good luck. It's going to be the biggest project of the year. Within the month of celebrating Black history, we also celebrate love. That's right, student leadership and Latina Chenillos will be coming together to sell Valentine's Day grams. Selling items like flowers and originally made cards. Will they be pushing for sales to spread the joy of love? That will also raise money for future events along the year. And also speaking on events, the senior class is back in action, planning events like We're trying, hopefully we can get it, fingers crossed, a senior lock-in, the things like senior talent show, all that great stuff, and having division meetings with also juniors so that we can share our college experience and give some advice and things to look forward to as they're going to be applying for college, and we're hearing acceptances very soon. So if you have any questions, you can email me at leon.jones@studentsfolkarts.org, or for more general questions, you can email the student council at studentcouncil@studentsfolkarts.org.
Thank you. Okay, public comment. Shocking. I don't know what we're going to do with it. Public comment?
This is the only time.
Yes, yes. Okay. Oh, we have one.
Yes, I know. It's a long line tonight. Maury Reardon, I'm on the APT board, and I have, I want to thank the school of leadership as well as Elise in really getting us through a difficult time with the renewal. It was a big relief for everyone, and I just want to recognize your leadership. So thank you. And then I also want to, I've been involved in the conversations about the new parent seats on the board, and I want to thank you. It looks like we have a vote tonight on Wylene and Leon. It's always hard to follow Leon, I have to be public speaking, but we're really excited and appreciate you kind of fast-tracking that. The last comment I want to make is that we know that our staff and teachers are here tonight to kind of kick off the labor discussions. And we just want to say that we, OSA couldn't happen and have the special sauce it does without our staff. And so we're here to say that we absolutely support them, we adore them, our kids depend on them, and that we hope it'll be, the tone will be one of collaboration. So thank you.
Thank you. We have a second one. We now have the advancement update.
I have to agree, it's really hard to follow Leon. His presentation skills. You know, I'm going to sit. He's not doing super great. But I want to start by just giving a quick update on the fundraising. And so, as of today, we're at a total of about $510,000 raised. In comparison to this point, where we were at this point last year, we're about 45K short. And primarily where that shows up in being the biggest discrepancy is in the annual fund. So as of at this point last year, we were about 420K raised, and that's mostly from the parent community. We were showing 51% participation from our parents, whereas at this point this year, we're at 365K raised from the parents and showing 37% family participation. And the main reason for that, there's a few reasons for that, but the main one is that we got off to a late start this year. I didn't fill my two open positions until November, and so they came in right in end of year fundraising, which is one of the busiest times of year for us. So I'm actually really proud of where we're at right now, and we're making some adjustments to our plan for our spring activities to try a few other activities to add to the spring, whereas in the past we would have done them earlier. So for example, we are going to do a phone-a-thon, which is going to happen in just a couple weeks, where we will be working with each department and volunteers from each department. We're trying to secure various parents, depending on department size, giving them a call list of all families who have not yet contributed within those departments, and then so all families will be called. In an ideal world, that would have happened in December. We tried, but we couldn't get enough volunteers in time, so we just decided to push it off into the spring. Normally in the past, in the spring, we would do one direct mailing and a couple of other like supporting the media campaigns, whereas this year we'll be doing 2 direct mails and then following up with some stronger email communications and whatnot. So I'm really excited about that. Our goal that was set for us is 525K this year. I'm hopeful that with a couple very strategic approaches to the Bonathon, for example, setting goals for each of our men, setting what I think would be reasonable and achievable goals per department, not just participation goals, but also dollar goals, saying, hey, whatever department, X department was trained, we raised 10K just in this one day for the Bonathon. If every department did that, then we would be that much closer to reaching our goal. So I'm really excited about that. I'm excited about the team that we've brought in. I think they're doing a really great job. I'm also realizing that it's tough to come in mid-year. It's been tough for me to also slow down and be able to manage the time appropriately so that everybody's getting what they need. But I'm really pleased with the results so far, and I think we'll do great. Second update in fundraising, just going on, just more updates around other fundraising. We've raised another 100K has just come in through other efforts, so meaning more major gift outreach. So I've been working with those on the leadership team who already have known relationships, such as one staff member has a strong relationship with Bandcamp. So through that partnership, we've been able to increase their annual gift. So it's a small win, but having that pledge of 7K coming in is a big deal. Working with another staff member who has a relationship with a donor, an individual outside of the parent community, but who loves OSA and loves this particular staff member, increasing or doubling her gift. So she usually gives 10K every year. Sometimes she's given 20, but we got her back up to 20 this year. So little positive momentum there. We've seen increased gifts from Another Planet, so who usually we solicit them during the gala every year, and they have consistently given 10K every year. We tried a different approach and solicited them a different way this year, and they more than doubled their gift. So we're seeing little small victories here and there, and it's helping to inform other approaches with other donors. So really excited about that. One date, please put on your calendar, it's Heart of Oakland. That'll be on Thursday, April 30th. There was talk for a while that we would do an auction that would be out separate from Heart of Oakland. And I have a group of parent volunteers that have been working with on that effort, but due to various complications, we decided to not do that this year, maybe focus on doing a big one for next year. We just realized we need more time, I need more support. I'm realizing that I'm really excited about this new APT this year, but it was really clear that the charter renewal really took up a lot of people's attention and focus this year, which was important, but I learned from that we also need that time to also be having a dedicated team of people focused on fundraising. So I'd love to collaborate more closely with the APT going forward. I just met their new fundraising chair for the APT. And so I'd like to just work on building those relationships and building some more momentum around that so that my department can get the support that we need to actually have a successful auction. Because we want to do it really well, and this will be the first time in 8 years that we've done one. So I want to make sure that we're doing it right and we're doing it well. That said, at Heart of Oakland, we will be trying a very mini version of an auction. I don't have full details yet to share on that, but we're working on it, and all to say, just to try and get our feet wet and try and get the momentum going around that kind of fundraising effort. So more details, more information to come about for the funds and how you can support, but definitely please go. That would be the first step, and then you'll hear from me about other ways that you can help the effort. And then finally, again, if you have any questions, or if you have any questions at all about any of those cases, feel free to stop me and ask. One thing that's not listed as an agenda item that I want to talk about, but that's really important that we talk about here, is one sort of outlier that has been a little bit of a stressful piece for me this year has been knowing what Jerry Brown's commitment is this year and going forward. So I've been working that angle and that relationship as I have over the past few years. And Stacy and I have had conversations with him and his team, and we're working on putting a proposal together, and it sounds like we, I'm really hopeful, and it sounds like we will be able to nail him down for a two-year commitment for participation with fundraising, which is better than what I had imagined, actually. So what we need to do is just get really clear on what we're asking him to do, which is goes hand in hand with creating this major gifts program. So I wanted to provide an update on the major gifts program, and so that's definitely a big part of it. So I've gotten the approval in terms of the budget and in terms of what I need to actually hire the support that I need as far as consultants go, and also carve out some time within my own project list so that we can really put some devoted time and effort into this. So for the spring, I'm hoping to just actually spend that time, a good solid 4 to 5 months, doing the research and doing some of the donor outreach and donor interviews that we need to start doing to start building our portfolios, and also to get a really clear sense of where we're at with our current donor community and what the capacity is and what it looks like, so that we can make some very clear and very reliable projections for the future. What I am hoping that we can do as a team with the board, with the team, with the leadership, and with all of the school is to come up with a really strong strategic plan that will help guide us for the next 3 to 5 years. And I'm only requesting that because of all of the changes that are being put forth due to the charter renewal. And just having the internal conversation so that we're all on the same page about what that actually looks like, and then therefore we have the language to go out and speak to our donors and try and sell what we're trying to sell. So in the initial stages of designing the Major Gifts Program, it was designed with the thought of doing a capital campaign in the back of our minds. So it's just circling back on those ideas and really getting clear on as to if we are still moving in that direction, even if it's 5 years out from now, we need to get started on that now. Or is it just simply just basic research to see where we're at to get general support for the school? Knowing that the budget projections over the next 5 years are more than doubling what the fundraising goal will be, we need to really figure out how we're going to reach those goals. So Jerry Brown will be a huge part of this, and just in the sense of we've done a great job as a school raising enough money and growing things like our annual fund program so that we're at a point now where it's not as big of a burn if he were to step away. So if we get that to your commitment from him, which I'm confident we will, then it'll give us enough time to really transition those donors. And it gives us the opportunity to have the conversations we need to have with them, with certain key donors in that pool. So, for example, I don't want to just simply strong-arm these donors for the next 2 years and say, give us your annual gift. But I'd like to sit down and have thoughtful conversations about each of those donors and say who would be appropriate to ask for a multi-year gift, for example, so that we can really have reliable projections, number one, and really phase out these donors and transition those who want to leave OSA and really are simply giving because of their connection to Jerry, and then also identifying those who we know will stay with us for a little bit longer. So, that's pretty much all I have to say. The one outlier, again, is that I don't know what the date would be if he wanted to do an event this year. I'm not sure if he even wants to do an event. We might actually do these solicitations year. If he feels stressed in any way about committing to an event, I'm not going to push him to do that. So you will hear more from me about that once we figure this out. So Stacy and I have agreed to give him a proposal by Saturday. So and it's just a one pager, it's nothing too in-depth, but it's something that I've been working on with Angie T, who is his liaison that I've been working with for years. So I feel really good about that, and I feel
Three questions. First off, I'm super excited the APT connection is now happening. I trust you guys have a process to make sure we're not stumbling over each other and be reaching out from two different angles for
right.
the same. Okay.
Yeah.
Second thing, I know you're a little behind last year's pace on the annual fund, but do you feel you can still hit the full amount? Do we need, I don't know if fundraising committee's met or development committee's met.
We haven't.
Okay.
And that's totally my
okay.
bad. I've been so swamped to trying to get this team up and going.
Completely.
So I don't know.
Okay.
If you look at past years, I would say no, because in past years in the spring, we brought in about 75K during just one particular push, which is represents a span of about 3 months, right, of work.
Yeah.
But since we're going about it in a different way this year, and we're actually going to be a lot more strategic about setting dollar goals and amounts and encouraging it in a way, communicating about it in a way that we haven't before, I feel more hopeful about it.
Okay.
If anything, I think we can get to 500. Maybe it might be a stretch to get to 500.
The goal is 500. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a watch list item for the Development Committee for Finance Committee.
Let me just say, though, in the other category where we're raising money from major gifts, we didn't have a goal set there,
yes.
And we're already at 100K.
Great. And my question about that is, I'm guessing 100K is completely unrestricted?
Yes,
okay.
It's all unrestricted. I think I have a total of like $10,000 of restricted funds.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Yeah.
When you mentioned the need for the strategic planning fund to be discussed in your state statement, what's the timing that you were hoping for?
I think that would require a bigger conversation.
Okay.
Today, our leadership team had an offsite, and we did the initial stages of that, and just sort of starting to talk about mission statement, vision statement, so that we can all be in alignment about how we're moving forward.
Right.
It's been talked about and mentioned, but I think that's the next step, is really figuring out the timeline.
Because I'm also overlaying that with the fact that we'll have an executive director who will want to play a major role in that.
That's also, I have to say, a big question in my mind also with a lot of this work, especially with the major gifts work, because for obvious reasons, probably. We wouldn't want to jump into anything without having that sort of plan.
And we had planned on our spring retreat, which would be focused on the strategic plan once we have the meeting in place.
Right. We didn't do the October
one.
Is there a broader discussion of the major gifts program tying with capital campaign? Is there involved in that part of it depends on it that these donors hang out? Is there potential donating to legacy areas?
Yes. I mean, in generally speaking right now, until I'm directed that we are doing I'm approaching this as just a general operating conversation. So no matter what we do in terms of the sort of project, whether it's a capital campaign or GenOps, his name will absolutely be tied to it somehow. And he will be involved in that process, hopefully. That's part of my ask to him, is to be involved not only in just transitioning these donors, but having it be more meaningful in terms of a legacy type thing. Does that make sense?
We developed a strategy for working with our alums, so being more purposeful in our outreach and developing that base as a possibility for funding over time in terms of the long range.
There are people internally who have a very basic program in place for alumni engagement, but I would answer your question no. I personally feel like we need to have a way more robust program in place. We could be doing a lot more with our alumni than we possibly are. The one thing that's really holding us back is that is more capacity issues. It's a bigger project to get it off the ground, and we would just have to commit to doing it like over a summer. I would love to get that going this summer, actually. And it involves conversations about, you know, how it ties into our database, for example, that we use for fundraising, which is a much bigger project than you might imagine. Because it involves going back, like literally going back to old yearbooks, recording families, getting in touch with every single family, making sure that everybody's at the same household, and then recording, getting all that information into our system, and then creating a program. So you know, we could be doing a lot more, and I feel like it's a huge opportunity.
Any other questions? Okay, moving on to the consent agenda. Does anyone want to pull anything off from the consent agenda? All right. Does someone want to move?
Actually, I had a couple questions. I don't want to take anything off. If I'm looking at the current version of the SARP,
yes.
I noticed the parent involvement section didn't mention parents joining the board. I'm just curious if that was deliberate.
I mean, you know, it was just a brief answer.
Okay. And then I was surprised at the ratio, the percentage of overall teachers with full credentials actually gone down the last few years, and we're now almost 50-50. Last year, 38 credentialed, 24 without full credential. This year is 36 and 32. I was just kind of curious what to make of that trend.
What's more teachers, too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just curious about the ratio. I don't want to hold up the approval of it. But.
Yeah, do you have a, we'll ask staff a question.
Yeah. Part of it is some CTE teachers are not in that count anymore.
Okay.
As people left, so that was some of the numbers. As some of the teachers are filling those positions, then we had more vacancies this year. We have people in the process of getting full credentials.
Got it. Got it. Okay. Thank you. So I'd like to move to approve the consent agenda.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, the consent agenda is approved. Ms. Smith, would you like to give our charter renewal update?
Celebrating that we have had our charter petition for renewal approved. And the part I really want to share a little bit about with you now is because we had to do a memorandum of understanding to extend or include the common charter application as part of it, just want to highlight really quickly for you the use of that application is tied to critical points that were brought out. It was very helpful to have Young Men Union Corps in that conversation because we were holding out. Initially, it was like, use it or we're closed. You're going to voluntarily close. And we were like, yeah, not really. Thank you, we don't want to do that. So the implementation rollout, as we've outlined in the charter petition, is included in this. So there's a timeline that it's one grade at a time. The other area I thought was a key win that if we're unable to use the common application, both parties will negotiate in good faith. So we get to go back to the table, have the conversation, and it will not constitute a material breach. If it goes away, we'll have conversations again. So it's important that we push the issue that it wasn't just an all or nothing one way down from the district to us, that we really wanted to be at the table, willing to have the conversation and support that. And the intention is that the common application will be the primary means through which students apply to the school. However, technical glitches up to and including not being able to select which arc the students want to come into are included as a technical glitch the way it's written now. So that gives us bandwidth to really create the common application to do what we want it to do. Because the preferences and the preferences tied to the arts are a level of sophistication the current software does not have in it. We already had add-ons and now we have more. Happy to say that we get to work those out and really make it valuable because it will be helpful to us. There's support for families that don't have technology. They do phone, they do multiple languages, they do outreach to communities and schools that we don't already have access to. So we see that as a big win and it's an overall tying-in factor. So that's the celebration, even to the next one. Even though we had to do the MOU, I think it's going to be helpful to us.
So I can't thank the two of you enough and everybody else that played a role in this. This was thank you. This was a process that was bumpier than it needed to be for scheduling reasons and drama reasons with meetings being moved and the MOU. And this will be our fifth charter or our fourth charter? It'll be our fifth charter. So and there's what, two or three other schools in Oakland that have been around longer than we have? Lionel Wilson maybe? Anyway, so it's a big freaking deal. So congratulations, you can move forward. I think that although we got the only negative vote, we got one no vote after all the drama, and there's reasons behind why that person voted the way they did that we don't need to get into that. But thank you and congratulations.
Good job, thank you. Okay, we have a governance update. So we have two potential board members to join. The first one is Wayne Hoover. Say it right.
Yeah.
So I am working on a process of us getting to know the board members, at least two of us having met with the board, with the potential board members. So Diane and I have spent a significant amount of time with Wei-Ling and are excited to have her on board as one of our parent reps. You all got her resume. Any questions?
I just have a general question about the terms of parent representatives, given that we could find a situation where a parent joins when their student is a senior and wouldn't be a three-year, wouldn't make sense to have a three-year term, and I'm not sure where that landed with the bylaws.
Yes.
Do you want to speak to that?
Yeah.
So we're kind of doing this backwards. We were going to address the bylaws at this meeting, but we're doing it at the February meeting. But it was important to get a parent rep on the board so that they can also participate in the executive director search. So those are questions that have to be dealt with.
Great. And there'll be obviously the parent member's a voting seat while I'm talking. Will the student position
student
be?
Student is a non-voting seat.
Okay, so will that seat count towards quorum?
I don't think so, but
it shouldn't if it's an
ex
officio position.
Okay, we're getting better at hitting quorum, but.
Yes.
Okay.
On another update, we have three, maybe four people in the pipeline. Join the board. We have a parent who has finance and has been on another board. We have someone who knows school systems well and has a music background. We have a financial person who also is a parent at a different school and is Latinx because we wanted more representation. And we have someone who may not be able to do it because of her job, but is also a Latinx judge. So we have some people we're also talking. We'll try and do the same process of having two of you meet them before we have them invite them to. So, do you want to say anything?
I'm just excited to be working with all of you and really appreciate, everybody on the board, but especially Elise for having worked with us to get this to happen so quickly. And I really appreciate, bending over backwards and doing things backwards, as Steve said. And it's so important, for the parents to really feel like there's representation and being able to have a voice in the search. So I'm very thankful for you all making it happen.
Great. All right, I would like to take a vote.
Sorry, I have one more follow-up. So because the bylaws don't state anything about a different term or anything about parents, we're treating this as a full board.
We're training it as the parent.
Okay, but do the bylaws, I don't want to trip up the bylaws by doing this. I want her to join.
So the proposal would be that she join and that the final terms of that parent membership be put into place or voted on.
I'm thinking forward to the district looks at it and says, well, you did this before this. And
so why don't we add... adding her as a parent member as in alignment with the bylaws to be voted on at the next meeting.
That's great. And the way it's worded here actually says proposed addition of board member Wei-Ling Hoop. So it doesn't say parent member. So
okay.
I'm fine with the way this is worded here.
I think we should just leave it as is because we haven't had this conversation about the bylaws, which we're going to do anyhow. We're going to add the seats. But
yeah.
So when you,
I don't think you can make a presumption about it. Because there hasn't been a presentation about what those bylaws look like and any of that.
Yeah, so I'm fine with the way this is worded in the agenda.
Okay.
Long story short. Sorry, not this.
So I'm confused because we're going to make a decision in February,
right,
about parent membership. So why wouldn't we say that we're both making a vote, but in February, language will be developed that addresses that parent membership terms.
I would rather take action as written here and add board member as written, and then we could denote her as the parent representative after the bylaws are passed. So she's a full voting board member, which is the intent.
Okay.
So this as written works for me.
Yeah, I mean, just from, and this is fine. There's talk about a bunch of new seats. We haven't really looked at those bylaws in a long time.
Right.
Are we talking about a fixed number of seats? How are we going to stagger the terms? How's this going to look?
Yeah.
For the overall board.
Yeah, I think we just leave this general. You know, we seat the new members, we go forward, we get that presentation, and we make sure it all fits together. That's just, I don't want to.
Steve, are you agreeing with that?
So we're voting on each of these individuals?
Yes.
I would like to move to approve.
Second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? All right, come on up.
Oh. This is gonna take a while, young man.
Yeah, you can give him a seat.
I'm concerned that, I hope the board creates an opportunity for Leanne to come out of his shell. To some extent.
We'll have to draw him out.
Yeah.
Okay, the second piece of action is voting on the addition of a student representative, Leanne. We have all gotten to know Leanne through his representation and spent additional time with him in other different meetings. Leanne, would you like to say something?
I am just honored, honestly. I know that board session's going to be happening around terms and things like that, but with me being a senior and coming to OSA my freshman year, I really loved how I've developed and grown and how much I have been able to bring to the school, but also how much this school has taught me. I'm just honored and excited.
You'll have to make sure the bylaws address what ex officio means in terms of voting participation. So I don't know if it.
I think they do, but
so,
yeah. we'll
make sure we have that in February.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I seconded already.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? All right, come on.
Thank you. It's also
okay. We now have the sunshine proposal from COSATS. Is that what you say?
Yes.
COSATS. All right.
And just to clarify, what COSATS?
I'll get you.
Mike has had some coffee or something.
Wow. Wow. For run and some coffee, let's go.
All right. So.
Good evening. My name, as some of you already know, is Chris Bradburn, and I am a middle school teacher here at OSA. As you also know, last May, the educators at OSA decided to form a union. I am here as a representative of COSATS, CTA, NEA. COSATS is an acronym for Coalition of OSA Teachers and Staff, and we are affiliated with the California Teacher Association and the National Education Association. The educators at OSA believe that students deserve a quality education, as I'm sure you do too, and this is why we formed our union. We are here to present our Sunshine Proposal. In this Sunshine Proposal, we are listing the scope and range of topics that we plan to include in our negotiations for a union contract. There are 27 points that cover our wages and working conditions as well as union rights. As I'm sure you know, and some of you may not, the law requires that both parties state in advance the areas they plan to address in the contract. So here are copies of the Sunshine Proposal.
And we're not going to read through the whole thing. We know that you can do that. But we do want to give some introduction to what you're getting. A goal of this process for us is to attract and to retain quality educators, because that is essential for creating and maintaining exceptional experiences for our students. This is just for me personally, but over 17 years at OSA, one of my biggest frustrations has been teacher turnover, already been discussed in a meeting earlier tonight with the teachers we lost last summer, some mid-year departures, even since the school year began this year. When I went to high school, I had most of my teachers that my older brother had 6 years earlier, and when I would go back to visit as an alum, most of them were still there. This is how you create school culture. This is how you build and develop great curriculum. And this is how you foster professional collaboration. The faces can't keep changing. I remain committed to this process out of the hope that we can work together to solve this critical problem. And most of the items in this proposal, in one way or another, address this particular concern. but a few in particular are essential. To attract and retain quality educators, we need to offer professional pay. I know that's difficult, but we've got to work together to figure this out. I know you were all moved last year by the stories of teachers having to live with their parents or cram into small spaces with multiple roommates or go into debt. The realities have not changed, and we are hopeful we can work with you to find a solution. Supporting teachers and creating the best possible learning environments for our students also means effective coaching for new teachers and meaningful training opportunities for all teachers. Throughout this proposal, you'll see many ways in which teachers need more support, and we look forward to working with you to hear those needs.
Thank you. My name is Kevin Choice. I teach in the middle department, piano program, also a member of the Step It Up team. Outreach coordinator. I've been here at OSA for 5 years just to represent our arts teachers who love this school. We love the opportunity to teach at this school. We want to remain at the school. We want to be involved more in the school. We want to have more access for all of us for shared decision making and a lot of things that are going on at our school and on our campus that affect our students who we love, who we care about, who we have personal relationships, who we know the things that can help them succeed here at OSA and after. Our input needs to be at the forefront. We need to have a seat at the table. We need to our educator voice is important. And decisions without educator involvement impacts our kids and students. And we want to make sure that we have our voices as equal as anyone else's here on this campus. We need to make sure that there is transparency and consistency in all matters that pertain to the school. And we need there to be shared decision making and involvement as educators. Our goals, some of our goals are supportive learning and working environments for new educators, a lot of educator turnover. We want to make sure that these new teachers are familiar with OSA culture, familiar with our students, and making sure that we're supporting them as they get accustomed to this campus. We want to focus on student learning. That's our goal here, is to nourish and make sure our students are getting everything that they need, make sure our teachers and our educators are getting everything that they need to have successful classroom environments. Creating quality programs, ensuring arts teachers are supported for their times and efforts, all of the hours and dedication that we put in. And as an Oakland native and a resident, just making sure that there's a competitive wage for Oakland natives and residents to maintain residency in the city. As you know, it's one of the most expensive places to live. We just want to make sure we have a competitive wage to maintain our residency here in Oakland. Our proposal reflects our desire to be included as equal and valued members of OSA's decision.
Another one of our goals is, and has been stated before, but just to reinstate this.
Just make sure everybody says their name because it's being recorded.
Andrew Yemen, visual arts instructor, non-credential, and a 12-year veteran of the school. We're looking for clarity and consistency is really what we're looking for in all areas of, like, you know, having to do with wages, stipends, hours, and working conditions, but. As important is clarity and consistency in the bargaining process, so that everything is in good faith and that everybody feels like they have agency in their body into the decision making. That's why we're here now. We also want to be clear and consistent, not only to the board but to our parents and our students and our fellow workers as well, as to what we're proposing. That's why we call it Sunshine Proposal. Mm-hmm.
So at this point, we are prepared to develop more specific proposals. You can probably tell in there it's very broad and general and doesn't say specific things, based on the broader topics that are outlined there. We have already elected 7 faculty members who are ready to represent their constituencies of the middle school academic teachers, the high school academic teachers, as well as the arts teachers and counselors. In order to ensure that this process does not affect our teaching and thus our students' learning, we intend for the bargaining to happen during professional development time, starting at 1:30 p.m. on Wednesdays, which is our regular early release day. We ask that the board keep that in mind as you appoint people to participate in the bargaining process. 1:30 p.m. on Wednesdays. As you know, of course, we ran into some challenges last year when we tried to negotiate changes to the salary structure, and we are looking forward to a new era of goodwill and clarity in the contract negotiations this year so that we have a stable foundation to give our students an exceptional educational experience here at Oakland School for the Arts. So thank you. Thank you. And if you've got any questions for us, I guess we can actually talk to each other now.
So exciting. Talk to you. Any questions? Otherwise, the OSA board has received the Sunshine proposal from COSAS. Any comment or, and we are consulting with our legal counsel and we'll have a response from you. Any questions? Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
The next item is the OSA Foundation update. This was just a general kind of wondering. So we have discussed at different times having a separate foundation to do the fundraising. Becky Eisen, who was the board chair for a long time, has said that she would run it. It would be a separate board, and then the fundraising would land on them. We started this about 2 years ago talking about this. I just wanted to get a temperature check if we want to pursue this or not. We can't make a vote or anything, so I'm just asking kind of for a general input.
I want to understand what the administrative burden of that is. That group would need to be supported.
Okay, so like how much paid staff?
From a staff perspective.
Okay.
At your house last week at the Families in Action meeting, I chatted with Jorge Lopez, who is now running the E-Methods Public Schools Foundation.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, well, that's something we talked about doing at OSA a while ago. I think it's been dormant, so now it's, he'd be more than happy to share ideas, what they went through to create it, if that's useful. Their foundation is pretty new, but I think it's a similar idea. It's the fundraising arm that then passes through.
What are the advantages that have been articulated? So, from my point of view, one of the advantages is then it's one board who is only focused on fundraising. And so they can have a fundraising board. That's all they focus on. Whereas we have, you know, charter renewal and fundraising. That's kind of the extent of...
Yeah. Said another way.
Yeah.
There's an expected contribution from all the board members here. Other foundations they set up have high net worth individuals on the board that can make much more substantial contributions. I also think it was of interest to the former governor, potentially playing a role in that as a mechanism.
Okay, so we'll meet with. Have you
ever
run and some coffee more often?
I'm good. Thank you.
You do think yes.
The way you just explained it. And that's because we're going to have a report, which is just a great report about the challenges and the position to go forward and, you know, what we're going to do with the tips and our facilities issues. It's just a great time.
Okay. Thank you. So we had asked Mike to come back with a deeper dive into Pillar 2 around subgroups. We had the achievement update last time. And so, Mr. Oz, if you want to.
Nothing like tons of numbers at 7:59, right? So I've luckily got a lot of coffee too, so I can handle this.
So while Mike is setting up, one of the things a report about the school that I'm going to put Romy on the spot to talk about. So they had intercession last week.
Yes.
And just to bring back kind of the mission and why we're here. And Romy led an incredible one and is an incredible story. I'd love her to share.
Thank you. So there were a lot of great intercession stories that happened, and I just want to share some background on what it is. Each of the teachers and faculty here were able to plan a day of field trip and adventures, and it's boxing and skateboarding and all kinds of fun stuff, rock climbing. The intercession that I chose to lead involved social justice, and so I had a bunch of kids come. We wrote letters to people who had been detained. We wrote letters to our Francisco, and we did peaceful protest at ICE headquarters in San Francisco. And it was great, and it was amazing. Clubs are spawning afterwards. Something really special that happened was that one of the students who was there that day, as we got to ICE headquarters, said, "Wow, this is the last time I saw my dad." It was in October when we walked up to this building. She was the one that when we got off BART, she's like, "Oh, I never want to get there." And literally while we were there protesting, she got the call that her dad had been freed. And that her mom was picking him up. And she was on the phone there saying, "Oh, I haven't heard your voice in so long." And it was just like, it was such an amazing moment. And it really just brought home to me, like, why we do what we do and how the incredible connection that we have with our students here and how much we can help them.
Okay, now to the numbers.
Mike, before you go, so watching the charter renewal process is, well, not directly in the middle, but performance wasn't an issue.
No.
That's a big statement to make. Yeah. Yes. They weren't concerned about our test scores.
It did not come up in any kind of significant way through the process.
Thank you.
That doesn't mean it's not an issue, though.
I get it. That's why I get it.
And I kind of like ask myself to be invited back because I'm sharing great numbers and I'm saying it's not all great when we really break it down. And that's what I just want to be transparent about. I want to be open about our weaknesses and share with you guys. My objective here is to show where our weak spots are and kind of show you guys what we're trying to do to address it.
But that's not a place we were a few years ago.
You're right. You're absolutely right. There's still a lot of room for growth, though. And with all that in mind, I'm going to do most of this based on SBAC scores, and I want to, like, also premise this by saying SBAC scores are not the be-all and all of anything, but they are kind of how most entities view our school and our academic success. So for us in determining interventions, they're not how we determine who needs intervention, but we do hope that through our intervention process, through our own internal assessments, we do see SBAC scores improve over time. So they do tend to be an indicator of outcomes. I shared with you last time, I'm going to really breeze through these first three slides just to remind you where we were at. Who was tested and why, and we went through and showed all the people that are meeting and exceeding standards, which tends to be what we're shooting for, is to have a high percentage of students meeting and exceeding standards. School-wide, about 70% language arts compared to the 50% state in the state of California. Math, up to 53, considering my early days here many years ago when I remember seeing the Algebra 2 results for 11th grade were 0%, and just being shocked by this as a math teacher, to now seeing that our math scores are around 53%, it's a major achievement. Now, I got to bring, it does deserve, I hear it. I also want to say this, like on math, and I'm math biased and math centric in a lot of ways, and I'm proud of it because it's actually kind of rare in school administration sometimes. But our math department is so strong right now, stronger than it has been in the entire time I've been at this school, where every teacher there is solid, doing their job, not under like, you know, kind of any type of close watch. It's amazing to see. So the growth has just begun, I think, in math, and the statements being made about needing to hold on to our teachers.
We need to take care of them.
We need to hold on to our math teachers and all of our teachers, or we won't be able to continue improving in this way. So here's the breakdown. The top category will show you what I showed you last week, and then as we go down, these are the SBAC scores, all school-wide, based on demographic, based on different subgroups. I'm going to go through real quickly this and then grades 6, 7, 8, and 11 just to give you a snapshot. Numbers should jump out right away. People should be drawing their attention to where they're significantly lower than the all student and also where they're higher and kind of understanding where the discrepancies lie. You okay with me moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
Grade 6. NA means that there's not a significant number of those students being tested in that particular grade level. You will, from a quick glance, see quite a bit here, and I'm happy to share this with you so you can look at it later. You should, because you'll find pockets where there's a grade level and a subgroup that school-wide is underperforming, but for some reason in that grade level, in that point in time, are doing extremely well, and we got to ask why, right? And we need to leverage wherever our strengths are. Grade 7. Go kind of quick because it tells a similar story.
So, Mike, just refresh my memory on tracking cohorts year over year. So, this is the how many years of SBAC data do we have here?
What is this, 3 or 4? I think three or four, I can't remember.
Okay.
Of having English and math. Okay. Science just did a pilot year last year.
But if I remember right, like we don't know that student X was here at sixth grade, here at seventh grade, here at eighth grade, or we do know that.
We do, but to share with you like kind of anecdotally what I've looked at to try to see those trends, it would take much more than 15.
I just want to know Leon's scores because he's on the board now.
Yeah. Leon would have no scores.
We need a slide for that.
Leon only has his scores from 11th grade.
Yes.
And the next slide is all Leon's performance.
For the official records, I retract that comment. It was a joke.
Look at seventh grade real quick. And look at the discrepancy where we're seeing significant discrepancies in some places. African-American math score is 17% in grade 6, 44% in grade 7. Right. And so these are the questions that I'm asking when I'm looking at this kind of analysis. Is why? What is being done in those particular pockets to support students that are otherwise underperforming? By
and do you have any hypotheses yet?
I really think it, yes, and I want to be careful how I say that because there's a lot of different ways to look at it. The power of a teacher.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
I mean,
right?
That's what all the research is.
Yeah.
So.
It's the fact that we're a small school. When I say our math department is so strong, there's not a room of 40 people. It's 5 people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've held on to them.
And so of the 5 people, do all of them teach more than one grade?
For the most part, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
In math, for the most part, yeah. When we get into high school, it's a little different.
Yeah.
And the big gap is between. I'm going to skim through these because I want to get to another point in a second. The big gap is between 8th and 11th grade, where to your question, Mike, about like being able to track over time, we don't have enough experience yet to see where the 8th graders ended up as 11th graders.
Got it.
Right. So I think you get the idea, right? So this is our growth from 2017 to 2019. These are just overall scores and overall scores school-wide, and this is that growth over time. You'll notice that in all of these subgroup categories, only one has gone down in that two-year period. So with a strong belief in incremental growth, as we have to have in education, just if these trends can continue, if we can just grow 2 or 3 points a year and continue that, eventually we make it very far. This is really impressive, and once again, a testament to the strength of our teachers and the level of detail they're putting into supporting individual students.
And the two smallest growth numbers are in the 80s, right? You got a 0.72 and a 0.96,
Those
are high performing. Yeah.
Yeah, and like socioeconomic status is here and students with disabilities is here. Look at these areas with 10% growth. I mean, it is obvious that a major change needs to happen here. We just brought in a new special ed program coordinator. We have a whole different approach to how special education is going to look in the school. It's community-based. It's based on us understanding and knowing every single student. We're going to see growth here. It's actually the area most primed for growth, and I think we're going to see substantial growth in the coming years.
The only comment I want to make is for the African-American, for the 0.24 and 2.12,
yep.
That can't be incremental. We have a plan for it.
Yes.
We can't be satisfied with small incomes. That's got to be a
no doubt. No
yeah.
doubt.
I know you know that.
I'm speaking generally when I say that. Yeah, no doubt. Okay, can I move forward? Here is another way of looking at it. This just gives you a little bit of a comparison to the state. DFS is the distance from the standard. We want it to be plus, so we're above the standard. Where it is minus, we're below the standard. It's a good way to look at it and to see, like, in the same subgroups, where is the state challenged? Are we challenged to the same extent? My major red flags are when we are performing lower than the state or farther from the standard in a negative direction than the state.
Sorry, can you explain the two numbers, the minus 3 versus
the plus
3.1?
Sure. DFS means distance from state. So difference from standard. This is the state is performing 3 points below their established standard. We are 36 below in that particular category.
And what's the 3 plus 3.1?
Yeah, we want to be above. So I'm trying to figure out what's wrong on this.
It can't be that.
No, that's a typo.
Yeah.
Romy, do you know where this one
that negative
came from?
36.
Yeah.
9.
Right.
That's a typo, no doubt.
Let me pull that up.
But it should be that negative 48, they're that far below the standard. We are negative 28. We're 28 below the standard in this place.
Sorry, the standard is...
It's established by the state.
Met or exceeded, or...
I don't know how, it's the number of students that have met or exceeded, but I don't know what calculation they use to determine it.
Okay.
So like for instance here, if the state averages to be that they're 30 points below the standard and we're 4 over that, we would want to see more and more of that. We're in
the
problem.
So the big takeaway is we're outperforming the state.
For this class. Oh, no doubt. Yeah, we're way outperforming the state, but once again, in all subgroups, right?
And the blue and the green are where we're really outperforming, and then the orange.
Not necessarily, because I mean the state is
blue with Asian subgroup, and we are also blue, but a little bit above them in that category.
Okay, so what do you want us to notice about this?
This is just to show that the same challenges we're seeing in this school are analogous to what's happening in the state.
Okay.
Do you have a correct?
Is it okay if you recognize by the workers?
Oh, sorry.
Yes. Yes, correcting, there should not be a negative in front of the
third. There should be a positive.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
73
wow.
Point swing right there. Boom.
Yeah.
Can we change some other ones?
Can yeah. I just ask a question, Mike, if that's okay? Is that okay to work? The areas that are orange, with the exception of students with disabilities, it's my understanding that American Indian, foster youth, Pacific Islander are some of our smallest groups. So statistically,
yeah.
Exactly.
Those are not likely.
May I?
Please.
That first column right there that says state average, that's the state's overall data, right?
Right.
And so the one for our school, let me just make sure that I'm understanding the concern correctly. So we don't have data for American
right.
Indian.
Statistically, not enough students to
report.
Right.
Yeah,
got it. Okay. Sorry, a little confusion. I'm glad that's a positive and not a negative. This is Matt. We'll take a quick glance now that we understand how to read it. Students with disabilities, once again, comes up as the place where not only do we have a major issue internally, but we're also performing farther from the standard than even the state is.
So that helps. When we're looking at a strategic plan, making decisions about where we need to focus, this helps us in terms of our specific
Absolutely.
Areas
yeah. Okay, so intervention process internally, I just want to give you guys like a little brief kind of glimpse of what it looks like. When we intervene, it's not like, oh, subgroup is performing low. Let's go address that subgroup. We intervene on an individualized basis with students. So we have internal assessments that we use to create baselines for our students and to help them grow over time. We also analyze student performance based on feeder schools. It's turning out to be one of the best indicators for us. We want to know as early as possible what which students need more specific interventions. And one of the most significant reasons for a student needing an intervention is actually based on the feeder school they're coming from. So that's one of our really early indicators. Now, we don't do this in a public way where we're saying, oh, you went to this school and now you need help. But as teachers, we're meeting behind the scenes and going, we've seen the trend of students come from this school. Let's keep a close eye and let's see if he or she or they need help in either of the areas. So each department this year is establishing and implementing assessments to monitor progress. Math and English already have this. They have very substantial methods. I'm going to share with you a little bit of the English one in a second. But I'm working right now with social science, science and world language, so that they have mastery-based assessments that happen throughout the year that they can then share with me and share with the other department chairs and share with their department so we can be tracking student progress over time. The student intervention plans are established, as I was saying, on an individual basis by the student support team. The student support team meets every week, looks through every single student's academic progress on a weekly basis to determine what's next. Is it weekly check-ins? Is it somebody is in need of an intervention course? Is it a parent conference? Is it an academic support period? Or none of the above?
Who's on that team?
So that's the run by the assistant principal, Katie Dogg, and it's a team that I formed last year as assistant principal. And in there is the grade level counselors, mental health support, the assistant principal, and the dean of students. And then we monitor the growth on these internal assessments, closely monitored by teachers and meetings that we have. I worked with Ms. Bradburn on some of this today, and I want to show you guys what we're looking at for English, communicated with families, and instructional practices are ultimately adjusted based on trends that we're seeing in these places. So I think this will jump to like a little glimpse of what these assessments look like.
Oh,
do you want to talk about this?
Yeah.
Can I just real quick on the last slide, Chris? Sorry. Just so I don't know if the numbers are going to make a big difference or not, but you talk about the performances based on the school they came from.
Yeah.
Fall of 21,
yep.
Open enrollment,
yep.
Going to be more diverse,
yep.
Right?
Okay.
And, I mean, will how do you think about that? Is that a big challenge, a small challenge?
To be determined. I mean, I think it's very important that we know as much about our feeder schools as possible.
Yeah.
I hate to do this in a way that makes it sound like we're putting down a feeder school.
No, I get it.
But if we know that a school that 80% of the kids that come from a certain school are performing below
yeah.
grade level in a certain area.
Yeah.
We need to know that about that school and take it seriously. And what we need to do is not, when we're bringing in new students next year, and especially the year after, that's our baseline year,
yeah.
right, for that group of students. So we need to be careful. We can't draw conclusions that this sixth grade is performing lower than the previous
yeah.
one. We need to look at that sixth yeah. grade and track them over time.
Like I like how you said, keep an eye on the student, because we don't want to walk in, oh, you're from the school, you're going to be well performing.
Yeah.
So I liked that you had that kind of view of, we'll just know to keep an eye on these.
I believe so strongly as an educator in the power of a self-fulfilled prophecy for both positive and negative consequences. And it's so we got to be really, this whole conversation's delicate.
Yeah.
We don't want anyone to walk away and look at this and now identify as being part of a subgroup and not as an individual. And at the same time, we got to use whatever data we have to best support our students.
Thank you for indulging me, Chris.
So SRI stands for Scholastic Reading Inventory. Thank you. Let me show you, and I put it up on my computer. This is
Can I say something real quick, Chris? What's missing here is names that I took out. So this is actually individual students.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what we've got is this is the growth from the last semester cycle. You're looking
for a particular, each line
for,
is a student.
No, this is every grade level.
Okay.
Six
okay,
down
okay,
to...
Okay.
Down to 12th.
Okay.
We've actually done every grade level. And what you're looking for typically is at sixth grade, about 23 points on average. In sixth grade, our average was 68 or 66.
And
so
are you assessing all the kids with
every
that?
Kid.
Okay.
Every child takes the SRI. It's a wonderful, you know, it's a snapshot. And I don't want to pretend like SRI is the end all be all. It's text complexity. Vocabulary and their ability to analyze things. And I, you know, I'm like, what are these students doing? I actually took it myself using my son's graduation this year. I thought, okay, better do better. And the challenge for me was that he had actually maxed out this class. I'm like, oh God, this is a lot of pressure. But I was sweating by the end going, am I going to at least equal my own kid? Which I did. But you know, it's a hard test. Like, you've taken it.
Absolutely.
And if you're doing it right, it's hard.
So you have everyone in the school taking it at the beginning of the year.
Right.
And then do the kids who are at the appropriate Lexile take it again, or
yes.
do you pull them off?
We take it,
so
take a benchmark.
Everybody in the school takes it.
I just took mine last.
Three times a year. That's
all
right, three times a year.
We'll take it at the end.
Okay.
And it's really great for kind of watching progress. So what you're seeing here, and I actually ran this data, this is eighth grade, and I ran it over starting, the oldest date goes back to 8/31. So they took theirs. Not last year, but the year before.
Mm-hmm.
This year, but prior. So this is like a year and a half worth of data for our eighth grade. So these are the top, you know, I don't want to make us look great, but these are our top gainers. Again, about 23 points a quarter, about 40-ish plus points a year is what you're looking for in sixth grade. By eighth grade and onward, it starts to taper down. I think it's maybe 30 to 35 points they need to gain in eighth grade. We had a kid who went 500 points.
Wow.
Showing the good stuff. I just want to show you what, as a teacher, you can look at. We got a kid who went from below to advanced. The darker green is a advanced. We got, you didn't get all of it. There's a whole, this
no,
has
I
got,
one slide.
Yeah. So as a teacher, when I'm looking at this, of course, I'm stoked. I'm like, this is great. I really want to see kids making these big gains. But it also identifies the kids that are not making gains. You start to see kids that are flatlining. You go, what's up with that? Why are they not making the expected gains that we want? And ultimately, at the 12th grade and the 11th grade, we start looking, are they ready for college? Are they ready for the reading level that they're going to be required to do at that age? It's a fabulous tool. I am in love with the SRI. Mike knows I'm a bit of a data nerd. So.
And my goal is to get this to happen in all departments across all grade levels, and then there's a next layer to all of this, and that's what we're working on right now as a school. Math has a comparable one with the same kind of data nerdiness occurring to be able to have us break down by student. I'm working on it in the other departments, but the next level is how do we now look, now that we have enough experience with this data, how do we compare this to SBAC data to try to identify what are the early indicators for somebody who's going to perform below standard on SBAC, and then what interventions can we put in place to prevent that low score ultimately on the SBAC.
That's what I was wondering, the correlation between this and SBAC.
We're working on it, and as you can imagine, that's the hardest piece of all of this, and it takes 3, 4, 5 years experience to even begin that process. Then you need to be, and we're there, so now we need to put the interventions in place and monitor the interventions. Do we see growth based on those interventions?
another 2 or 3 years, and if it keeps developing, hopefully over time as a school, we have these really, you know, then they're going to change the test on us. But we'll have these great indicators that can show, based on our own metrics, what is an early indicator of a student who's going to perform below grade level.
Can I speak about the impact on the SBAC? Now, this one is testing reading, which is half of what the SBAC does. That's kind of the input side. So can a student comprehend and understand what they're taking in? Then the SBAC has the second layer is what can they do with that information, which is the writing thing. Heard your kids complain about it. It's a Google writing test. So that's what we work on in the class. It's a lot harder to get that kind of qualitative analysis of the student's writing, but you know, obviously that's what we do all year. And I like to play a game of like, guess where they're going to score. If my teaching is any good, did I anticipate where they were going to hit?
Yep.
And I usually do pretty well.
And if you got that, it means that we do have those indicators and we can put the appropriate interventions in place. Yeah,
the SRI has been around for how long?
At our school, Brianna Sharp brought it in.
6 years probably here.
For us, but it's been around longer than that, but we've had it for about that long. And
it's used in OUSD. My daughter uses it in OUSD. When I go to a conference, that's what they're reporting to me as a parent in terms of my daughter's growth with it.
Okay. We unfortunately we were working under OUSD's license for a while, and when we switched over to have our own license, we lost all that data. Very sad.
Oh. Wow.
So one last, because I think I'm over time, one last thing I want to share with you too is on math. We're doing a similar thing right now. Mike King, as math department chair, is really diving into the data, but we're even taking it another layer, which is, I'm glad they're open to this, but we're looking at, across all teachers. And teachers who are teaching the same subject with the MDTP, the mathematics, diagnostics, I forget what it stands for, but you're actually able to see what areas they're underperforming in, and we're comparing it by classroom, so then the teachers can work together and share what are their instructional practices, why is teacher A having more success in this area than the other teacher, and it's, I love it, like it's the healthiest thing to see when teachers start sharing where their potential weak spots are and where their the other one's strengths are.
Other questions from the board?
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Ms. Ross.
You're welcome.
Okay, we have an executive director search committee update. Christina cannot be here, so she sent me a summary.
And remind me, who's on the committee?
On the committee, Carol, Steve, Diane, Jonathan.
So not me.
Not you and
not
me.
Okay.
Yeah. So we've had 73 applicants for the role so far. 25 of them were invited to and completed pre-recorded videos. They're sent a request to complete 5 video recorded questions through an online platform. The search committee is planning on conducting interviews starting next week. A group of teachers representing Arts Middle School and High School have been selected by the school to view resumes in a closed meeting tomorrow. A parent representative has also viewed them. Scheduling is still being worked out, but our hope is to be able to bring finalist candidates to campus by the end of February to meet with students, parents, faculty, staff. The committee will provide an update to the community by the week of February 10th about the next steps in the search. Do you guys want to add anything?
That sounds like a perfect summary.
That's
excellent. If you said it, I missed it, but 73 became 25 became how much? How many are?
Five or six.
Okay.
Very excited about the quality of all the candidates.
Good. Okay.
Right. So, okay. So I move we move to closed session.
Second.
Oh, all those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed. Okay. So Leon, you do now come into closed session with us. And I'm supposed to say something. We're entering closed session to discuss upcoming negotiation with counsel. There's a correction to the agenda as our agency designated representative is Young, Mini, and Core. That's it. Okay, so we will now go. Are we going upstairs for the closed session? Okay.
And what are the rules on audio recording?
That doesn't go into closed session. Thanks, everyone, for
there's no audio recording.
Thank you, guys. No.
You have to ask technically when you come back in open session. So you probably got homework tonight.
Yes, I did.
You probably don't want to stick around until we come out of that.
No, I'll go.